This is episode 197, recorded the 17th of February, 2014.
Greetings all.
Hello.
Who have we got this week?
We have Matt in Australia, and Tom in Provo, Robert in Georgia, Christina from Facebook.
No, actually from the Quaymax comment.
Oh, you said comment, so I figured you meant Facebook.
I just meant like the contact page thing on the page.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. But we don't know where she's from.
Right.
And Greg in Jamestown, California.
Okay, this one's from Matt, this next one.
Okay.
I mean the first one.
The first one.
Yeah.
He has a question that he recently received from a friend of his. Do fish sleep, and if so, Do fish sleep, and if so, how?
Okay, that is a great question. Apparently they do. But it's a little harder to hook up fish up to, like, measure their brainwaves and all that kind of stuff. But apparently this is what they do. They just, based on their activity levels and so on, they, in their responsivity, their reactivity to stimuli, I guess, is how they determine whether or not a fish is sleeping. And the link that I will put on the show page mentions a bit about that. They've done some studies, quite a bit of research, in fact, and this is what first occurred to me when I saw that question. Done quite a bit of research on blind cave tetras and sleep.
And blind cave tetras don't have eyes.
Right, they don't have eyes. And they looked into that a bit and they tried to discern based on, if I recall correctly, based on the habits of the blind cave tetras, the habits of the tetras that are sighted and live outside the caves that are the immediate predecessors of the blind cave tetras. You know, they, well, very akin to their immediate predecessors, or the species that gave rise to them.
Okay.
And hybrids thereof, apparently.
What did they find?
And determining how that worked out. And they concluded that cave fish, the blind cave fish, don't sleep much. They don't undergo those periods of inactivity as much, and they do it on a different schedule. And they concluded that it's probably a survival characteristic. It's adaptive not to sleep very much when you live in a cave, because you might miss out on the fairly rare occasions when food shows up. And so they sleep less.
Interesting.
And they are interested in that because they figure that the genes that regulate that are probably similar to the genes in humans that regulate insomnia. So they figure by researching the fish, they might understand a few things about how human insomnia works.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
What about normal fish, though? Fish sleep?
Yeah, so they do. And you can see sometimes fish are sleeping. If you ever look at a tank at night when the lights are off, you can see a lot of times the fish will get into this state where they're not very responsive. And they stay in one place, and they just kind of slowly breathe. Of course, their eyes are open, but their respiration is decreased, and their activity is very low. And that's where their sleeping is.
Can they still see when they're asleep? I guess we don't really know. Huh?
Some people sleep with their eyes open.
Yeah, that's true.
Fish just don't have a choice, I guess. But yeah, so they do. They do sleep. I'll put a link to that article about the cave fish, and it talks a bit more about that.
Alrighty. Thanks for the question, Matt. Yeah. And let's go to Tom in Provo. He says, I enjoyed the video of the Aquarimax Google Hangout. And once again, a big fat thank you very much. Did we say that already?
We did.
Okay.
Last week, but it bears repeating.
Thank you to Matt for editing that. That was, I think you merit an Aquare Lad t-shirt now. He says, I enjoyed the video of the Aquarimax Google Hangout and hope it will become a regular thing. I appreciate everyone who participated.
Yeah, I think we will do it again.
Yeah, that would be fun. A question about Tony's daughter's tank. The Java moss looked good, but I was not sure how it was planted. It seemed to be a rectangular patch, smaller than the dimensions of the tank and elevated from the bottom. Was it growing on plastic mesh or maybe in a transparent open-topped container? I ask because although I'm very aware of the virtues of Java moss, there are times I would like it to be less wild than occasionally happens. In Tony's daughter's tank, it seems to be flourishing, but not completely out of control.
Good question. So, Tony, please illuminate us on the particulars of the planting.
Yes. And then he goes on to say, my CO2 injection is finally working, mostly, and plants are actually growing. At present, I have a real hodgepodge of species, but have had most luck with Brazilian pennywort and Italian vallisneria. The tank's about 23 inches tall, and both species have reached the top. When I first planted the valves, they turned brown very quickly, but I trimmed them back to about 2 or 3 inches, and they fully regrew and began to spread. The dwarf baby tears is not carpeting as fast as I would like, but several patches are well established and looking good. I think I just need to be patient with it.
Cool. I love that stuff. Any kind of carpeting plant. I'm just totally there. Love it.
I also have some green foxtail, Mediophyllum pinnatum. What do people usually say?
Probably something like Mediophyllum pinnatum.
Pinnatum?
Something like that.
Even Adam Adam?
Yeah, please.
Okay, I also have some green foxtail, which was very attractive until it began to clog up with mulm and anything floating in the water. I agitate the plant daily to shake things off, but it's still a mess. I think it needs more regular water movement.
It probably does. And you might want to try a fine particulate layer in your filter or something.
Is it a plant that's in faster flowing water usually? Where does it grow?
I'm not really sure about that, but I do know that it likes water with not a lot of particulates in it. So.
He says, I have noticed that since I've added the CO2 and additional plants, the Java fern grows more, but smaller leaves, from which my point of view is a fair trade-off.
Yeah, I've sometimes seen that too. Although, I have seen on occasion where it grows larger leaves too, so I don't know. It seems to react in lots of different ways. But I like it when it does the smaller leaves.
He says, I'm adding nitrate and potassium and continuing with the Excel.
Beatus est pisciculus.
That's right.
Cool. Well, hopefully we'll see some photos or some videos soon.
I would like that.
It sounds like a fun tank.
Oh, we have a comment from Mick too. He didn't get in the list.
He didn't get in the list? No, oh, sorry.
Put him in the list.
Sorry.
Okay, so he made a comment on the Facebook page. He says, I'm just catching up on the shows. I brought all my axes up together, and because we were talking about...
raising axolotls,
yes. Was it on the Google Hangout we were talking about that?
I don't recall, but we've talked about it recently. I think it was a recent audio podcast.
Okay. If you can keep them together, or if they will beat themselves up?
If they will, yeah, attack each other, because I had read... I hadn't done it. I just read that sometimes they can be cannibalistic if kept together.
Okay, so Mick says, I brought all my axes up together and have never had any cannibalism or even the slightest signs of nipping. I've always kept them well fed and given them lots of space, and now they are adults. They are often seen in a pile all together. I have seen some badly chewed axes and other more cramped setups, but given regular food and space, I can't see it being a problem.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
If you just...
anything will go crazy if it's too crowded and it's not eating enough.
Right.
Look at the things people do to each other.
Yeah, when they're hungry and cramped.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
Oh, this is from Robert in Georgia.
Oh, okay. I was looking at the list. There's no name.
Sorry. Yep.
Okay, so thank you, Mick, for your axolotl wisdom.
Indeed. That's exactly what we wanted to know.
Can go to this from Robert in Jordan.
He sent
some videos. Jordan. Georgia.
The author, Robert Jordan.
Robert Jordan. I guess the countries Jordan and Georgia are...
countries?
Sort of vaguely close.
Not that close.
Well, closer than we are to either of them.
Well, I think Robert's in Georgia, I'm pretty sure. I hope so. If I messed it up, then you feel free to correct me.
Okay. He sent us some videos.
He did.
Of his fish. He says, these are my guppies. I put out a few large females in the spring when morning water temperatures are above 65 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't do water changes unless the water gets so green I can't see the fish. This usually only happens in the spring. Once the live plants get going, the water will clear up, and no more changes are done unless they occur naturally from the heavy rains we get. So I haven't seen these videos, I'm assuming. Is this a pond?
Okay, see, I had a chance to watch the videos. Kelly hadn't had a chance to watch the videos yet, so we just took a peek at the videos, so you got to...
So now I've seen the videos.
Get some context, there you go.
Yeah, okay, so these are his outdoor... the videos of his outdoor tanks. One is a 110-gallon Tough Stuff stock tank with guppies in it. Really big females.
Yeah.
Like, big.
And explain the color scheme of the
guppies. They were kind of from what I could tell, as fast as they were moving around and from the top anyways, they looked like they had kind of a white body and pink to red tails. And then the other one is his, he has a 20-gallon long, also outdoors with the similar color-schemed guppies in it. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. But there's just like a little wee feeding station and the rest of it is plants blossoming forth out of the top of the tank.
Yeah, frog bit.
Frog bit, yes. So he was talking about, what I was just reading, he's talking about the stock tank. If it doesn't rain, I top the tank with water trickled in from the hose. There is no heater filtration or water filtration of any kind. I feed them, but only because it lets me see them and gets them used to me, so it's a bit easier to catch them. Southern leopard frogs have found the tanks, and I have hundreds of tadpoles in the stock tank. Birds and insects come to drink and bathe in the tank. Other larger animals started coming, and they were not bothering the fish, so I let them until one fell into the tank and nearly destroyed some of the potted plants. There is now an electric fence around it. I wonder if that was like a squirrel or a raccoon.
Yeah, I was wondering what kind of animal.
There are lots of plants in the tank. Anacharis, dwarf Sagittarius, Amazon frogbit, a few crips, a couple of Amazon sword plants, and duckweed. Most of these seem to have survived the winter in spite of an inch of ice that lasted for a couple of days. The frog bit doesn't look too good, but the parts that are underwater are still green, so I'm betting that it will grow like crazy as soon as it warms up. On a quiet summer day, you can hear the tank sizzle from the steady stream of oxygen bubbles that are coming off the plants. That's pretty cool.
It is cool. And I like the setup. It looked really nice. The water looked, you know, clean, and the fish looked
happy
in the bloom of health. And it was fun to see them in their feeding frenzies. I was curious as to what you were feeding them, because it looked really familiar, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. It was a very fine-grained food. And I just felt like, oh, I know what that is, but I couldn't tell what it was.
So maybe you can tell us.
Yeah. And do you have any shots of your 20-gallon tank from the front? Because it was very interesting to look from the top, because there was all this frog bit, you know, growing on top of it and looking really happy. And then you had a little sort of a, what would you call it? A feeding station for the fish, where you kept the plants from growing in there, but it looked like maybe some sort of baffle made of styrofoam bits or something floating there. So this little
defeating
oasis.
Oasis. It looked like PVC pipe.
Maybe it was PVC pipe. I don't remember. Yeah. But anyway, it was cool, and I liked how that looked because the plants were obviously so green and healthy. But I just was wondering what the tank looked like from the side, because I wanted to see the other plants in there, too. That would be interesting to see. It kind of reminds me of what, at the Honolulu Zoo, when I used to volunteer there, they had all sorts of interesting water features outside stocked with tropical fish on the zoo grounds. And one of them was a kind of a stream-style pond, so it was made to look like a stream, really long and skinny. And there were pumps at one end that brought the water back up to the front. So it wasn't a fast-flowing stream, but it was, you know, looked kind of like a stream. And all it had in there were fancy guppies.
They ate the mosquitoes.
Yeah, and it was kind of the same idea. And it was really cool. I liked it. I mean, there were plants in there, too. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, in terms of livestock, there were only fancy guppies, nothing larger. And it was really fun. It was a really long stream, but you'd look in there and you'd just see these flashes of color from all these guppies. It was fun.
It was neat. It's a neat zoo. Okay, well, shall we go on to Christina?
Yeah, let's do that.
She says, I was wondering if you still have and use the Everclean Aqua Filter. It's been out for quite some time, but the internet has very little about it. I'm new at fish keeping and came across this setup. I have a Fluval Edge 12-gallon, and I don't like it. The filter is okay, but the tank is too deep for cleaning. I wanted to get a bigger tank with good equipment. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much.
Okay, well, Christina, thanks for contributing, and let's address your question here about the Everclean Aqua Filter first. We are not currently using one.
We don't even still have it, do we?
We used it for a while. I guess we have some of the components still, but we don't have the actual filter, and the reason why, there were two reasons. One is because it tended to drip.
Down the back of the tank.
Down the back of the tank occasionally.
When it got the floor wet.
Something would get tweaked a little bit, and so it was kind of unstable that way, so... Mm-hmm. Didn't like that, and I contacted Joe, the developer of the Everclean Aqua, who sent us the sample one, and mentioned that to him. He said, yeah, that's why we're now building EverClean Aquas into a tank. So the tank comes with the EverClean Aqua filter built into it. And the one we had was kind of version 1.0, and that's now the 2.0 is in this new setup where it's built into the tank, so that doesn't happen. But yeah, we're not using it now for that reason. And also because...
We haven't tried one of the ones where it's built into the tank.
Yeah, we haven't tried the newer version of it, but that was the main reason. The other one was I felt that the filter, you had to do a lot of maintenance in terms of opening up the filter and washing off the pads a lot. So it kind of defeated the purpose of not having to dig in the gravel because the effort was just about the same.
Mm-hmm.
You had to do one or you had to do the other. So, and I was more used to cleaning out gravel, I guess. So
it's easier.
I wanted to go back to that. And yeah, so I wouldn't necessarily recommend that one, even though we tried it out and there were good things about it. It certainly does suck all the stuff off the bottom, like it says it does. It definitely does that, but those were some of the issues we had with it. And I would say the Fluval Edge can be fun. I mean, I haven't used that particular tank, but there are some fun things you can do with it, but I can totally see why you'd say it was difficult to clean. And it kind of depends on what you have in your tank, too, and that, you know, the bioload in the tank. If the bio load is low enough, you might not need to get down and do some deep cleaning very often. So I'm curious what you have in there. If you want to let us know, maybe we can talk about that, and that might throw some light on the subject. But in terms of getting a bigger tank with good equipment, I would say get the biggest tank you can, the tank you could that will fit in your budget and your space, because they're just easier,
mm-hmm.
and you have a lot more possibilities with it. So, yeah. Go for the largest you can. And in terms of filtration, kind of depends on what you get, too, what you're interested in, what you have now that you're planning on moving into that tank or whatever. So please let us know more about that. But to speak in a general sense, I would say look a little bit into canister filters because they're pretty powerful. And with larger tanks, they're a popular choice. I can't recommend any specific brands or anything, but I would say look into that a little bit. I tend to use anything up to, a 55-gallon. I use a lot of the Marineland BioWheel filters. I like them for a lot of reasons. One of them is that the filtration medium in terms of biofiltration, the bacteria rely on atmospheric oxygen rather than pulling oxygen from the water. So it tends to make sure the water is well oxygenated. And the agitation created by the filter also helps break up the surface tension, which helps keep problems with certain bacteria, like mycobacteria, building up on the surface of the water in the scum. So I do like those. But they're by no means the only way to go. I just like to use them a lot. Canister filters, like I said, are a really good choice for large tanks in many situations. And sometimes a combination of a couple of different types of filters is a good thing. So if you would like to send us what you're interested in doing in terms of species of fish and in terms of your space and budget and so on, maybe we can help you out even more. But I hope those tips kind of help you go in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. So good luck.
And please let us know because we'll be happy to give you some more specific information.
Okay. Well, we got one more. Let's mm-hmm. go to Greg in Jamestown, California. Which always tickles my funny bone when he writes from Jamestown, because I think...
Because you grew up 20 minutes from there.
Yes. Home. Okay.
Okay.
He says, "Hi, Russ and Kelly. Loved the live stream you did on YouTube. It was fun to watch. A little over a year ago, I wrote and linked a video to my betta fry that got into a tank by itself.
I remember that.
And how it had grown much larger than the others. Oh, that's right. Okay, I remember that. Well, that fish has become a gorgeous male combtail. I still have around 80 of the bettas, including one of the breeding pair, which is the one fish's parents.
Uh-huh.
I did sell quite a few to the local fish store, males and female. I sold them on the idea of putting a bunch of females into one of the display tanks. They were still in a community tank for me, so it was easy to do to move. And they sold pretty well from what they told me. One of the guys said he walked past and had to stop for a minute to figure out what kind of fish they were since he wasn't used to seeing them in a community tank. I'm not sure how many I actually sold to the local fish store, but I think it was around 50 to 60 in total. It was enough to get me a used from the local fish store, 30-gallon
plumbed
with under gravel filter, rocks, lights, heater, two rams, and then he says he later lost them, a very large piece of African driftwood, which is now in with his stenopoma? How do you say
it's
that?
It's usually pronounced tinopoma.
Tinopoma. The sea doesn't make any noise, huh?
It's bush fish. Okay.
Lots of food, which is flake, frozen, and live. That's a lot of in-store credit.
Yeah, it is.
That's a good job. Attached is a picture of him, and I'm guessing him meaning the comb-tail?
Yeah, or, yeah, okay. The comb-tail, I'll show it to you.
I couldn't get him to flare like this while horizontal, but the best of the 30 pictures I took, it's always hard to get a good picture on a digital camera. Yes, that's true. He says, thanks for a good podcast that talks a lot about freshwater. Lots of salt talk out there, but not much freshness. Well, I hope we're always fresh.
Yeah, it's true. There are lots of good saltwater podcasts, reef podcasts, and so on. But it's difficult. See? That's a pretty fish.
Yeah, he is a pretty fish. We put the foam... The foam. No. I was looking at the iPad and the picture and, I don't know, trying to say picture and phone all at the same time. I don't know. We will put the picture
on the
page.
The show page, right. Yeah, he's a pretty fish. He reminds me of St. George.
Oh, yeah, he kind of looks like St. George.
We used to have a red crown tail. Looks a lot like that.
Because he had like a layer of white, you know, like the butterflies around him. So he was red and white, so we named him St. George. And then we had one with the same pattern, but it was blue and white, so we named him St. Andrew.
Oh, but only St. Andrew had the blue and white.
Didn't St. George have it too?
No, St. George was just red.
Oh, he was just red, huh?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, St. Andrew had the white.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Mick will probably get that.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody else will understand it. But
well,
if you do, you're cool.
Yeah.
Even if you don't, you're cool. I'll still love you. It's okay.
Oh, I wanted to tell everybody one thing about... the little project I've been doing, the Daphne on Tap.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I finally got some...
Guaranteed to never make you drunk.
I finally got the tubing sealant that I needed, and I've been working on that. So it's cured now, and I'm going to be testing it out. And if it works, I'll make a video about it and show everybody. So, but I mean, it seems to be working so far in the tests that I've done, but it just leaked. That was the only deal. So now I believe with the sealant, I've corrected the leaks, and so it should work just fine.
Okay.
I just have to, now that it's cured, because I put the last bit of sealant on today, I'll try it in the next few days and get it to work. It's just taken me a while. All right, I think that's about it. So
good. May the fish
be with you.